As we start preparing for BIBA Conference 2024, we've been reflecting on everyone that attends and how, as an industry, we've embraced diversity, equality and inclusion. In this mini-series of the BIBA Pod, we'll recognise not only how far the insurance industry has come, but also what else we can do. Join us as we delve into our guests' valuable insights and stories. Good morning to you both. I am absolutely delighted to be starting the BIBA Pod mini-series on diversity and inclusion with two such phenomenal guests. So Donna and Sandra, welcome. It's great to be chatting to you this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Donna, would you like to start and just give us a little bit of background about who you are and what your story is? Because I follow you on LinkedIn. I think you're a phenomenal human. Tell us, who is Donna Scully?
Well, probably everybody knows that because of my social media presence. But so I'm Irish. I'm from Dublin originally. So I suppose I'm an immigrant in the UK. I left school at 16, but I went back to school in my early 20s and I qualified as a lawyer eventually, part time. And my kind of introduction to the insurance world is through my personal injury practice, which is Carpenters Group, where we look after, you know, brokers, insurance companies, fleets, and we do insurance services for them, including personal injury and insurance services and claims handling. But that's kind of my background. I've been there for 26 years. I run it with John Carpenter, who's my husband. So there's loads of questions come out of that straight away. And that's kind of where I've come and where I'm at.
I'm really interested because both the legal profession and the insurance profession are very traditional professions in a lot of senses. So I'm really interested to see where this conversation goes. Sandra, tell me a little bit about you and your background, because it's very much insurance based, but across a whole world of different things. So I'm interested.
Certainly is. So my name is Sandra. I'm Polish, but been living in the UK for over 20 years. So hence there is always a bit of like, where's your accent? That's where it is. And my insurance career, I've changed my job so many times in the insurance. I'm a big advocate of stay in insurance, just move around if you're not happy with your role. So I've started as a broker. I also then did market development. I've had very good years at Lloyd's. I worked at Lloyd's for a good couple of years. And actually Brexit was my big career break, I would say, which sounds very contradictory if I think about it. But that's what I've discovered, project management. I've always been involved in one way or another in projects. I just didn't know that that's something that you can actually make a career of it. So I've been doing change management, change consultancy for a number of years now across the market. And 2.5 years ago, I've sort of branched out from your typical corporate role, set up on my own, been doing consultancy. I've been doing a bit of coaching as well, working with women across the market, sort of helping them with their career or just adjusting to change. There's been obviously a lot of change going on. And my recent ventures, because I think someone long time ago in my career said, I get very bored, so I need to be stimulated all the time in my career. And I think that's very true. So currently I do sort of two things that focus on, which is social media management for insurance businesses. And I also run a podcast called 100 Women in Insurance, which is all about showcasing and celebrating women in the insurance industry, alongside still continuing doing some change consultancy across the market. So yeah, that's me.
So you two are ideally placed to start the conversation we're having today about gender diversity and inclusivity in our industry. What I'd like to start with, if it's okay, is what was it like when you both started your careers? What was your kind of overall feeling? How did you feel being a female in the industry? Donna?
Well, I think I'm the oldest along the group here. I'm looking. So I probably have seen more change because I'm in my 50s. So when I look back, I mean, you know, I come from a very basic background as well. So I had that kind of social mobility piece to deal with. I was a woman. I'm Irish, you know, so I had all that stuff. And I moved to Newcastle first, and then I moved to London. And London in particular is quite elitist. you know, and it was like, what university did you go to? So I had to deal with that. And obviously I was drowning in imposter syndrome. I look back and realize, I didn't realize at the time, but, you know, it was quite sexist, and it was very hard to feel relevant and to get your voice heard. And it was before Me Too. So there was a lot of sexual harassment as well. You know, if you wanted to look well, or you cared about your appearance, you know, it kind of could give off the wrong vibes, and people would take it the wrong way. So I was always struggling to be taken seriously, you know, not to be objectified, which I didn't like, as you can imagine, as an ambitious woman, I didn't want that side of it. So it was really tough. So I think the things that have made things better for me are Me Too, certainly in terms of being taken more seriously and not being judged by your appearance only. And I think other things have moved, which is, you know, women getting better roles, women being able to change the map. You know, hopefully me is part of that with what I've been able to do at Carpenters Group. And I just think, you know, I had another stumbling block, because London then started to get a bit better, and it was becoming, there was more women around the table, and we were being taken more seriously. And then I moved north, and that was like going to the dark ages. You know, I was back to 2 women around the table, you know, and 20 men. And so that was a bit of a shock and a bit of a step back. But again, because I've been up here 26 years, I've seen a big change, and that's positive. So it's come really a huge difference for me because of my age and because of starting as a secretary and working my way up. I had all of that to deal with. So I'm really pleased. We're nowhere near we need to be, but I'm very pleased at the changes I've seen in my lifetime.
Absolutely. Do you have a similar experience, Sandra?
I would say so. I always go back to when I was doing a experience. I was doing a few weeks in insurance during university. And I remember I was doing it with a broker, but they've arranged for me to sit at the box with an underwriter. And now I wasn't very aware of the dynamics of women and men, and kind of, you know, I was at university, it was all just fun, and there was loads of people from anywhere in the world, so I wasn't really aware of the dynamics that happen in the corporations. But for some reason, I remember sitting there and thinking to myself, I can't see a single woman on this floor apart from maybe like one younger lady sitting somewhere there. And I thought, let me count how many women would actually come down these stairs. You know, the box was actually close to the stairs. If you've been inside of Lloyd's building, that these sort of iconic stairs. So I was sitting there, and I remember for 1 hour, I must have been about 5 or 6 women that have gone on that stairs. And I remember that kind of got me thinking, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. Now, insurance, it's a family business. And I remember and it's always been like, you're going to work in insurance. And I remember going back and going, I don't want that. I don't want to be, you know, this like one woman out of 1,000 men walking around here. I don't really feel that's me. So I actually rebelled for 2 years after graduating, trying to find all sorts of different roles, and then gave in. And I was like, actually, it's not that bad. I got to know a bit more, and I realized such a great opportunity being in the market. And then I started in broking. And again, I wasn't aware of certain situations that I was in. They felt uncomfortable and they didn't feel right, but I didn't feel like I was able to speak up, because I felt like if I could speak up, I would jeopardize my career. So I went through that kind of thinking for quite some time. And it wasn't until I joined Lloyd's and I saw senior women, you know, in my team, and I've interacted with a lot of women, and they were like, in certain situation would arise, and they will speak up and they will say to me, Sandra, why didn't you say anything? I'm like, oh, I thought that was actually all right in comparison to what I've seen in the past. You know, I would say, oh, I didn't know I was allowed to speak up. And that really opened my eyes to what's okay and not okay, and how certain situations need to improve. I agree, though, with Donna, that I think things have changed, and I always find it inspiring when I meet especially young women in the market that I would mentor, and they will speak to me about certain situations that may arise and how they said, well, that's not okay, and they actually spoke up, and they were comfortable to speaking up, and they were comfortable to standing up to certain situations and educating their colleagues, which I think is great, because that shows that empowerment is there, that education is there, the awareness is there. yes, there is way to go, but if you sit in the Lloyd's building now and count the women on the stairs, I can guarantee you there'll be more than five. And I always say starting a podcast, 100 Women in Insurance, I thought it would take me a while to get to the 100, and I'll really struggle to find 100. And, you know, there's this stigma that women don't brag and women don't, there aren't that many of us in insurance. Well, I mean, I'm really considering, and I've been joking with a few people, to change in the 100 to thousands, if not millions, because there are just incredible women contacting me every day, showcasing the great job that they do, you know, talking about the successes. And there are just so many. So I think we're moving the needle. We have a way to go, but certainly it has improved.
You've both touched on the changes and the improvement, and you've mentioned a couple of reasons why, for example, education, empowerment. I know there's not one answer, but what do you think the biggest thing is that's changed the needle? And the reason I'm asking is because both of you have given the impression that it's come from a almost a self-empowerment. It's nothing, it's to do with women valuing themselves and having that, Sandra, you mentioned the word brag, you know, that self-empowerment. Now, I'm at the table and I deserve to be here. What is it that's made that change?
I think it's the more people who get there. I think, you know, the more of us who make that transition to the table, and then, you know, we look around. And I think for me, and I can only speak through carpenters, I think one of the things John and I have realized that because we've set up a culture in the business of, you know, genuine DEI from the beginning, and, you know, it's meritocracy, there's flexibility for everybody. But what we've realized is that women have taken that opportunity. They've really grabbed that opportunity and they like that culture, and it attracts women. And it's attracted really great women for us. And to the point now where it's just organic, and we're a business of probably 50-50 men and women top to bottom. And we all just get on with each other. We don't even notice what sex we are. We just like work well together. And I think one of the things we didn't realize is that it would be a big part of our success. You know, the kind of diversity that we have and that kind of social mobility piece has made us successful. Not just getting business and winning business and doing a good customer service and all of that. That's really important, obviously, commercially. But I think, you know, the culture of the business and how you run it and the feel of it, it is a huge part of your success. So I do think, you know, as D&I starts to become more genuine, and it is becoming more genuine, I think, across certain businesses, then women will be empowered. It'll give them their voice. They'll know that they're able to speak their mind. And I mean, I agree with you, Sandra. I used to be afraid. I was saying to Sarah before we came on, you know, years ago, you couldn't say I had to leave a meeting because your child was sick. Mm. It just couldn't be done because, you know, the business would be very upset with you. It would be held against you. And you know, that fear that it would affect your career. Not now. I mean, you know, I love seeing and I hearing when women say, I have to go now, my child is sick, or I need to go to the play or the sports day. I'm go, good. You know, that's part of our life. That's part of what makes us who we are. So I think that all of that progress will help and will bring women and give them that empowerment and that voice.
Donna, can I ask a question that's just popped into my head? So Carpenters, you said, is 26 years old. Congratulations. And you set, so you and John are work partners, husband and wife, have kids. And you mentioned previously that John's quite hands-on with kids, and, you know, so you both felt the pressure and you kind of shared that pressure. That 26 years ago or 22 years ago was unusual. Yeah. And even nowadays, I'd say it's a lot less unusual, but it's still not perhaps the norm. How has Carpenter's culture shifted with societal acceptance? So you guys already had that,
yeah,
but has it shifted even more so as you two have kind of come into this, actually this is where we should be and pushing it forward?
I don't want to sound like I'm bragging because that sounds horrible, but I think we were probably just a bit of ahead of our time. And I think because maybe we work together, because listen, it's 30 years old because John started 3 years before, 3 years before me. So I have to give him a bit of credit there, or he might kick. But but I think we were a bit ahead of our time. And I think because maybe we were together, he saw the pressure I was under. He realized he had to help. And I think I'd worked in London. I'd seen women struggling in London. to have families and to work and everything. So I think we were trying, I was trying to fix things that I saw that didn't work in other businesses I'd worked in. And some of that definitely was flexibility, understanding around families and having, you know, balancing family and work. And I think, yeah, working together, he probably saw the pressure I was under and knew that he had to help me. And I think the great thing about John is he thought I was equal to him. So he didn't think, oh, I'm more important to you because I'm a man. We were equal partners, and I was equally needed in the business, and I was important to the business as him. So it wasn't like, you know, oh, well, you don't matter, you go and get them. It's not up to you. I think the thing that is helping, though, even with our culture, is the culture around men not being afraid to say, I want to look after my children, I want to have paternity leave. Because that is something that's, you know, what it isn't part of our problem, but it is a societal problem. And I think, you know, even we need to work on that, and society does, because, you know, why wouldn't men want to be involved with their children? Why wouldn't they want to help their wife? And as we get more and more people, both partners working, that's just, to me, that's the game changer.
You know, Sandra, I don't know if you want to add something here. I know this is quite.
I'm just like nodding. I'm like, yes, please. If anyone can't see me nodding, I'm nodding like crazy because I'm very passionate about that topic. I'm like Donna, very lucky that my husband is as well. We see each other equal. And, you know, I often get asked, how do you work so much? And it's because we work together and we've never seen the roles divided. But I'm very passionate about it. I think your earlier question, Sarah, around how has this changed? There's one thing that a lot of organizations that don't understand that equality piece fall into, which is fixing women. And we need to stop that. Women do not need fixing. you know, that's not the solution to equality. We do not need fixing. We do need some form of empowerment to see what's possible and to learn how to speak up and how to negotiate flexibility where you need to. That's where I think there's a piece of that empowerment and networks comes in. But there is the element, exactly what Donna is saying, around the groundbreaking things will come from actually men and women seeing equal and men being okay to say, hey, I want to take paternity leave. You know, I want to take off 6 months or whatever the paternity leave is and look after my child. I want to take a career break to look after my children, or I want to do part time with my wife somehow. You know, these kind of, I think we should showcase more of these stories to empower men to actually do that. Because I think talking only about giving flexibility to women to work certain way, it's also bothering additionally women. So one of the ladies I spoke to recently, and that's come up a few times, but she phrased it very well. She said, it feels like we still expected to do everything. So we expected to raise the children, we expected to have a great career, make money, you know, be courageous and all that, like be everything. And unfortunately, men are not still expected to do it all. It's okay for the man to work, and that is that thing. But for a woman, that seems to still be a societal pressure. This is not an insurance problem, it's a societal pressure. So we are going down a bit of a rabbit hole. But there is that pressure. And I think when organizations thinking about how can we enable equality in that company, don't just focus on fixing women, focus on the organization as a whole. I love, Donna, what you talk about around, you know, 50-50 working together, focus on the skill set, focusing on creating an environment where everyone can strive no matter what that situation is. I think that is where we're going to now see the big movement and changes.
One of the things that struck me over the last couple of years, particularly relevant to you guys, Donna, with the culture within Carpenters Group and Sandra with your 100 Women in Insurance, is the mindset. And I've spoken to Sam White about this on a number of occasions as well. And it's a left brain, right brain thing. But there's been an awful lot of rhetoric in social media and YouTube and all sorts about get up at 4 o'clock, drink a pint of water, do a 10-mile run, do your emails for 15 minutes, and then you'll make a million. And, you know, that type of real, like, go, focus kind of attitude. And it is a much more masculine type of mantra. And I've found myself caught in that kind of mantra many, many times, and it does not work for me. I have three children. I'm running my own business. I cannot do that. My body would break. My mind would break. What I have found really inspiring, and I include you two in that, is seeing the different way of being successful that is not that. That might work for some people, but it doesn't work for all. And I'm just really, really loving watching really inspiring, empowering women coming up with different mindsets that's around flexibility, that it's around sort of almost boxing things, right? This is my time to do this, but this is my time for the children, and I will not compromise on that, and I won't compromise on this, and therefore it has to be this way. And I really feel lighter watching that kind of thing. So I suppose thank you is what I'm trying to say in a really long-winded way. Just on that particular note, and bringing it back to insurance, how do we get more women into the insurance industry? Because we've come very far, but how do we get better at it?
I think showcasing is the thing, right? Really showcasing. I say I've started this podcast, 100 Women in Insurance, thinking that I'm pretty woke when it comes to great women in the insurance industry. Well, I was very biased. I'm realizing that there is far more talent out there than I could have ever imagined. Now, I'm a person that's very vocal about this topic and actively goes out and, you know, learns about it. I can only imagine the bias that sits in someone who doesn't know the industry, who's never seen the industry, only sees the news, maybe sees some photos, and the perception is very different. So I think we need to get better at talking about it. We need to get better at showcasing, but also introducing those policies and introducing those ways of working that attract talent. Because there is a flexibility here. I think, Donna, you've touched on that. I think that it is an attractive market. We just need to get better at promoting that. And that goes all the way to job descriptions, which can be extremely, really not selling very well the industry when you read them. You know, but it does go down to that. So I think there's an element of us showcasing more and talking about it more.
And I kind of touched on, I think, genuine DEI in the business, a genuine culture of equal opportunity, not just ticking the boxes, does attract women. We can kind of tell you that because it's happened for us. I think seeing more senior women as some good role models who are open about the challenges and the struggles. I mean, I'm really open about, you know, you having it all, you know, how tough is that? We're all human, and I think it's that human story, but it is scary. I mean, you think, I think the input into insurance is about 50% women, and we've got about 18% CEOs, you know, in insurance at the moment. Now, there's only 1% in Australia, and about 3% in USA, so we're doing better than the other places, but even so, you know, and I think, you know, some of the mentoring that goes on is really important as well. I mean, you know, I do the Girls Network, which is 16-year-old women. So you're girls. So you're trying to already empower them and have them thinking they can do it. And you know, they don't have to be mean to do it. They can be good and kind, and they can still be successful and still have a life. And, you know, things like, you know, the Breakfast Club. I've done some mentoring there. And I think, you know, yes, it's kind of older women saying it's better, but this is how you get your voice heard. This is why it's important. And I think it's just all of that, really. And not just women mentoring women, even men as allies supporting us. I mean, I've had brilliant support from men over the years as well. I mean, John at the top of that list. So, you know, I have some great women in my life as well. But I just think it's all of that. And I think supporting each other, being open, talking to each other, and, you know, just all of that together, and the showcasing particularly. And I think, you know, when you go to events now, insurance events, and you see a lot more women, that's very attractive as well. And that's a very positive move, and it's great. And I think there's a nicer atmosphere. I think it's more natural and normal, you know, like, why wouldn't there be a mix? So, you know, I just think we keep plugging away. And obviously the stuff Sandra's doing in Her 100 Women, a lot of stories, good stories are going to come out of that, and younger women are going to hear them. And it's going to inspire them, and it's going to drive them on. So I think that's brilliant.
There's one more thing, as Donna, you were talking about women at the events. I think one thing that we need to get better at, and this is event organizers, is having female speakers, and not about D&I, but about speciality. So you always see female speakers or diverse speakers at D&I events, but what we need is cyber insurance presentation that has a female cyber underwriter, and we still lack that. And it's just because you tend to go to the same names that have been presenting for years, which obviously they are absolutely amazing people and they have great knowledge. But I think we need to get a bit more proactive at making sure we invite diversity specialists in their field, not in D&I. I think that would help as well.
I think that's a fabulous suggestion. I just wanted to touch back quickly on something you've both mentioned in a roundabout way, and that's on mentorship. Donna, is there anyone in your life that you kind of have there as this was the person that mentored or changed or challenged my belief and helped me overcome imposter syndrome?
Yeah, and it's going to sound really corny, because it's John Carpenter, who is my husband and my partner at work. So, but yeah, John, for me, you know, he saw the insecurity in me because I could hide it because I've got an outgoing personality. He saw stuff in me I didn't see in myself. He pushed me, you know, and every time I'd achieve something, he'd move the goalposts, which really irritated me because I wanted to party to celebrate my achievement and he would just make me do something else. So I think just that belief, you know, somebody, I mean, there's been lots of people over the years, but I think the biggest one is John. And I think, you know, when I came to Merseyside, I wanted to get a job in Liverpool in a big law firm. And he said, oh, why don't you set up your type of business in my business and we'll do it together? And I just thought, what? I don't know what I'm doing. How would I do that? I've never done that before. I've never been self-employed. And the rest is history. So, you know, I think somebody who kind of pushes you and sees you. And also on a positive side, you know, when I had the boys on a Friday afternoon, I used to say to John, right, I'm taking my brain out and putting it in the drawer. And I'm a total mammy for the next 2 days. And he accepted that, you know, and he's kind of someone who never switches off 7 days a week. So that must have been tough, but he did accept it. So I think he pushed me at the right time, but he did support me and he kind of, you know, knew when I said, this is my mammy time, that was it. And it wasn't going to change. So I just think he's been great and he's really kind of helped me a lot.
I think that's fabulous. I think everybody needs a John.
Yeah.
Who is your John, Sandra? I know we've spoken before about, you know, some of your pivotal moments in your career. Can you kind of nominate or name anyone that was quite pivotal in your own?
Yeah, I would say in an insurance wise, say Hayley Spink. She's been firstly the lady that I saw that I just thought, wow, this is, you know, what you can do with your career. This is the kind of person you can be. This is how you can navigate the various rooms and difficult conversations. She's always been a sort of big inspiration. And then, you know, she, whenever I say to her that she helped me with my career, she and sort of guided me along the way and pushed me through some doors, she always said, well, it wasn't me, it was you, because you did the job. And that is, I think, the great part about her. You know, and so I would say she's been the biggest person probably in my career. But the other people, there's been so many women along the way and men. I've had, to your point, Donna, amazing male managers or colleagues as well, but especially managers who wanted to make sure that the teams are built the right way, the people are given the right opportunities, that are driven the right way. I think these have been as well pivotal to my career. And equally, I do need to give a shout out to my husband, who does, like you, Donna, you know, sometimes he'll be like, just go and do it and I'll hide away, and he'll just keep on pushing me out there. So having someone in your life that support you on a personal level as well, I think that always helps.
So from a mentorship perspective, obviously it's been quite important. I think it's important in life, not just in business. I think having that one person to go to and go, help, or like you say, Donna, knows you better than you know yourself, so can pick up those little insecurities and go, I hear you, I've got you, you can do it. How can we as a community give what more proactive things could we be doing now to support those younger generation? And I love the 16-year-old network and breakfast club ideas. What else could we be doing?
I think in your own business, you know, I think you can do a lot through where you work, whether you're it's your business or it's not. You know, there's lots of young people in our business. You know, we've got like a lot of apprentices and we've got academies within the business. And I think it's that showing them that there's opportunity, and that opportunity is for anybody, whether you're a man or a woman. I think it's particularly important to say, if you want it. You know, the one thing I don't want to do is to say that everybody wants to be like me and leave school early and then decide they want to go back and become a solicitor. Not everybody wants to do that. But I think it's saying, if you want it, making it as easy as we can. I mean, one of the things, it wasn't easy for me to find a route to do it. It took too long. I was working and studying, and I wouldn't want really anyone else to go through that. I'm trying to say, how can we make it easier than that? I'm delighted I got there and I have it, and I feel very privileged, but I still think it was a bit tough. So my whole kind of thing is to make it less tough for people like me coming along. And I think I love the people who set up these mentoring groups as well, you know, and who do the podcasts and things, because I think they're the people who get off their bottom and say, a lot of us will kind of volunteer to mentor or do that, but the whole structure is already set up. You know, the Girls Network is really well structured, the Breakfast Club is, but those, you know, the likes of Catherine and all those people, the amount of work they do in the background, and they actually, you know, that's, I've so much respect for them doing that. You know, I do it in the business, but I think that's a bit easier than going out there. And you know, it's very public. You know, if you get it wrong or someone doesn't like what you do, you know, you're really setting yourself up. But I love it, and I've got so much respect. And I think those women and the men involved, you know, really deserve a pat on the back, and they are changing things. And I think the more of us who volunteer to support them and give our time and our energy and honesty. Because I think one of the things you really have to do in mentoring is be honest. I mean, I just mentored a girl for a year who's 16 in Liverpool. And I kept saying to her as we went through all the different like topics, do as I say, not as I did. Because I did so many things wrong and the hard way, you know. And I'm saying to her, I'm here to make it a bit easier for you. So I think all of that kind of really helps. But hats off to the Sandras and the Catherines and all those people who take the time as well as their job and do all this other stuff as well, because they're amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I think you've raised a really good point, because I think there's great work being done. So another name that, you know, probably should be added to this is Sam Ridgewell around the empowerment development, the work that she's doing on TikTok, which is just, you know, I think she said she actually got quite a few people in insurance already just from the TikTok account having a job. So I think that's incredible. But the piece that you've talked about, Donna, around in-house work, I'm a big advocate of retention. And I think a lot of organizations miss out on the talent they already have and focus a lot on external talent, and actually identifying people within the organization that can be retrained. They maybe want to do something different. The personal situation has changed and maybe they don't want to be on that managerial path anymore. They want to do a different job. I think retaining talent and thinking of ways to retain your talent, one, it's, you know, build your brand, empowers your employees, helps to retain great talent within the industry, but also is actually, you know, cost efficient, quite honestly, as well for a business. So it's a win-win on both sides. But I think that retention piece, I don't think we do enough of that. There are some companies that do a really good job at it, but I think a lot of companies focus externally and not necessarily always internally.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree with that. I mean, one of the huge success stories I love in the business are we have people who've come in as office junior and are now like second in command in finance and become solicitors and legal execs. And I think, you know, that's where success is. And that's, you know, your people. You know, and I agree with you, we have people maybe in the legal bit who want to go into insurance or insurance into legal. And I think it's the nice bit of having quite a diverse business, that there's different opportunities. And you can have apprenticeships in HR, in insurance, in legal. You know, we've apprenticeships across the business. It's not, you know, like you can be an apprentice in any area and then you can develop and get better. So I agree with you. It's like, what one of the things we really noticed, and I noticed this really early on, was when we offered in-house free training and opportunity, so many women stepped up to take it. Because it was during the day, their working day, when they didn't have to be outside because, you know, they had families and commitments, and it was paid for, which was good. But then the loyalty you get back, I mean, you know, some of those people, some of those women are still with us 20 years later, you know, and they've gone and had their families and they've come back, they've done, you know, job shares part time. And now they're like, you know what, my family's grown, I want to be successful. This is my moment now. And I love that. I think it's a great story. It's a great picture, isn't it? And it just shows you that commitment and training and loyalty really pays off around, you know, kind of balance with flexibility as well.
I was just going to add that one thing as you were speaking, Dawn, that came to my mind is ask people what they want to do. I think I've seen too many times, especially around young talent who joins the industry and then the manager assumes the path they should be on. And as a young person, you join because you join, someone advised you or you just happened to apply and got the job, right? And then you realize what your skill set actually is. And then you've been pushed on this path of a career that probably doesn't suit your skills. So speak to your employees, ask them what they want. You know, and like, I think we miss that opportunity too much. We push people a certain way. And sometimes that's needed. Yes. But listen to what their needs are. Look for the soft skills. I think that's just one thing. Sorry, I would just add.
Yeah,
I agree. Thanks. Really important. I think it's really important. This you've both mentioned the need to ask and see where somebody wants to be, because there are a lot of parents that want to be a parent first and just earn the money on the side, and it is often assumed the gender roles for that, and sometimes, you know, there's other ways around. So I think asking is really important. I think probably to kind of sum up the podcast, I'd love you both to give me maybe your kind of top three bits of advice that you would give to young women and older women coming into or thinking about staying in the insurance industry. And I've changed it deliberately to your point, Sandra, about keeping retention. So you know, maybe you can pick one each or whatever. What comes to mind? How do we get women in and keep them in the industry? What's your advice, Donna?
I mean, my advice whenever I'm talking to women, whenever I'm talking about my journey or anything, is, you know, be yourself. Because I wasn't myself, really, when I think about it, for a number of years. It took me a long time to have the courage to be myself. I worried about my background. I worried about my lack of university. I worried about my accent. You know, I worried about all these things that stopped me being myself. So even my 16-year-old, you know, my big message to her was, you're amazing. You're unique. And whatever you want, you can get if you want it. You know, if you don't want it, that's fine. But if you want it, so be yourself, I think, because as a woman, we are unique. We are different. I mean, you kind of touched on it, that we're, you know, we do lead differently, a bit differently. We do work a bit differently. But that's good, because we can complement each other as men and women. And I think, you know, that we have that empathy. I think we have a great sense of humor, by the way, but you know, that kind of thing. So I sort of, it really is for me, and it is, and it sounds so easy. And I do say to young people and young women, I know it's really hard, but don't wait as long as I waited, and don't be drowning in imposter syndrome so that you're frightened and you're trying to be who people want you to be, you know, just be yourself. So that's always my number one go-to when I'm speaking to women, or, you know, like to anybody really.
Which I think is a life lesson for women, full stop. Sandra, what would you say to women coming into or staying in our industry?
I always come back to one advice, which is the logo behind you will change throughout your career. The title may change as well, but who you are as a person is what will get you to that next step or that next opportunity or whatever it is. So really work on your kind of core personal brand of who you are. And it touches to Donna, like, really build. I've also pretended to be someone for quite a long time that I thought I had to be, and I'll go home crying, exhausted from being that person. So, you know, work out who you are. I always say, listen to feedback so you can see how you're being perceived, to use that if you want to continue to be perceived that way. Look at how other people's are, other people are, what fits, what doesn't fit for you. There isn't one way. And just work on kind of who do you represent? because the logo, the name will change for your career, but it's you that will stand out. So that's my like number one advice.
So essentially, be who you are and then market it because you are good enough. Yeah. What a phenomenal end to a wonderful podcast. I am so grateful to you both. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.